You already know that a single brand health score hides important differences. But can you say exactly how MFCH information it hides? Mathematics can. And the answer is more than half. Not approximately, not in some cases, provably, in every case, by at least 152%.
Yeah, and it is a staggering number when you first hear it. But honestly, the geometry leaves absolutely no room for debate.
Four results today, each one, something you've probably sensed intuitively but never had the tools to prove. Why single number scores lose more than half the picture? How many truly distinct brand positions exist? It is a finite number, not infinity. Why cohort boundaries are inherently blurry, and that is geometry, not bad data. And why the order you encounter a brand changes the brand you end up believing in.
Right, because we are, you know, we're finally moving away from treating perception as just a loose collection of marketing metaphors. Mm. Today, we're looking at the formal, computable architecture underneath it all.
Exactly. Now, really quickly, a prerequisite note for you listening. If you haven't heard Deep Dive E21, Why Geometry, you might want to start there. E21 establishes why dimensional thinking matters in the first place, whereas today's deep dive shows what the math actually proves.
Yeah, E21 is definitely the foundation for this one.
For sure. Okay, so let's unpack this. We are starting with that massive claim from the intro.
Okay.
Mathematically, why is that single brand health score sitting on a corporate dashboard lying to you?
Well, to understand the lie, we really have to look at a foundational concept in high-dimensional geometry. It's called the Johnson-Lyndon-Strauss lemma.
The Johnson what?
Johnson-Lyndon-Strauss. And when you hear the word lemma, just think of it as a proven mathematical stepping stone.
Okay, got it.
So this specific theorem proves that whenever you compress many measurements into a smaller number of dimensions, information destruction isn't just like likely. It is mathematically guaranteed. And the lemma actually allows us to calculate the absolute minimum amount of distortion that must occur.
Wait, so it's not an estimate? It's a proven floor for how wrong the number has to be.
Exactly.
Let me see if I can ground this for a second. When I save an audio file as an MP3 or like an image as a JPEG, the computer is using a compression algorithm, right?
Right.
It throws away frequencies human ears supposedly can't hear or colors we can't easily distinguish just to make the file smaller. Are we talking about a similar mechanism here?
I mean, that is a great bridge to the concept, but the brand health score is actually so much worse than an MP3.
Really? Worse how?
Well, when you compress an audio file, you might lose, say, 10% of the acoustic data, but you still hear the song. In spectral brand theory, we model a brand across 8 distinct dimensions. So semiotic, narrative, ideological, economic, and so on.
Right.
When you compress those 8 dimensions into a single one-dimensional score, the Johnson-Lyndon-Strauss lemma proves that the required distortion for a competitive set of just 10 brands exceeds 152%.
Over 150% distortion. That is wow. That means the single score could inflate the distance between two competing brands by a massive margin, or it could entirely erase the difference between them, just placing them at the exact same point.
Exactly. And we see this really clearly through the lens of information theory. Think about the standard 5-point grading scale we see on so many surveys.
Like giving a brand a 1 through 5.
Right, or an A through F. That scale captures about 2.32 bits of mathematical information. But a full 8-dimensional brand profile contains roughly 20 bits of information.
So wait, if I'm doing the mental math right by relying on that single grade, you are keeping just 11.6% of the available information.
Spot on.
You are throwing away nearly 90% of the reality of the market.
Which brings us to the visual consequence of that loss.
Let's actually map that out for the listener. Picture a radar chart on the left side of your screen. It has 8 labeled axes radiating out from a center point, representing that full brand profile.
The classic spiderweb chart.
Right, the spider web. When you plot the data, it creates a very distinct, jagged shape. Maybe it spikes high on ideological conviction, but, you know, dips low on economic accessibility.
Sure.
Now, an arrow points to the right, collapsing that entire complex shape into a single number, say 78 out of 100.
A very standard, very comforting dashboard metric.
Right. It looks very neat and tidy for the board meeting. But now, picture a second brand. Its radar chart has a completely different shape. It spikes exactly where the first one dips, and it dips where the first one spikes.
So the structural inputs are basically opposite.
Exactly opposite. But an arrow points to the right, and because of how the averages work out, it compresses to that exact same score, 78 out of 100. The visual proves the information loss. You have the exact same output, but structurally opposite input.
Yeah, and in our framework, this phenomenon is called spectral metamerism.
Spectral metamerism.
Right. The term actually originates in color science. If you've ever bought two black shirts that looked identical in the store, but then when you walk outside into the sunlight, one looks purplish and the other looks green.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
Right. That is metamerism. Two completely different light spectra look like the exact same color to the human eye under certain conditions because our retinas compress the light data.
That makes perfect sense.
So in branding, spectral metamerism means two brands can score identically on every aggregated metric, yet be structurally opposite in reality.
It's like judging the climate of a city by temperature alone.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Right. Because wind, humidity, and atmospheric pressure all just vanish from the equation. A desert and a rainforest might both average 75 degrees, but they are absolutely not the same thing.
The climate analogy is a really strong starting point. But let's take it a step further. In branding, it isn't just that you packed for the wrong weather. It's that you're building an entire corporate supply chain for snow shovels in a place that only gets monsoons. Brand managers allocate millions of dollars based on the 75 degrees of a brand health score, completely blind to the fact that their primary competitor is a rainforest and they are a desert.
Wait, hold on. We're talking about brand positions as if they are objective coordinates in space.
They are.
Okay, but if compressing eight dimensions down to one destroys the reality of the market, what does the full eight-dimensional reality actually look like?
Right.
Because how much room is really in there for brands to compete? If you ask any creative director, they'll tell you there are infinite ways to position a brand. Infinite space.
Right. Creative intuition naturally assumes infinity, but mathematics imposes limits. The space is vast, yes, but it is strictly finite.
Finite.
To understand why, we have to borrow from a field called sphere packing.
Sphere packing, okay.
It's a branch of mathematics that asks a deceptively simple question. How many non-overlapping spheres of a given size can you fit into a specific space?
Seems like a geometry puzzle.
It is, and a very complex one. In 2016, a mathematician named Marina Wiazowska proved the absolute densest way to pack spheres in eight dimensions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and for this, she won the Fields Medal, which is essentially the Nobel Prize of Mathematics. She proved the optimal structure is something called the E8 lattice.
Hold on. You're throwing around the term E8 lattice and sphere packing. I'm imagining, like, a dense crystal structure or something. How does a crystal structure dictate how a shoe company competes with a tech brand?
Well, let's define the spheres first. Think of a single brand position as a sphere. The center of the sphere is the brand's exact coordinate across our eight dimensions.
Okay.
The radius of that sphere is the perceptual threshold.
Meaning, like, the minimum distance required for a consumer to actually tell two brands apart?
Exactly.
So if they get too close, they blur together.
Correct. So the E8 lattice tells us the geometric kissing number for eight dimensions.
Kissing number.
Yeah, that is the maximum number of spheres that can simultaneously touch a central sphere without overlapping.
I see.
In 3D space, like billiard balls on a table, that number is 12. In eight dimensions, the kissing number is exactly 240.
Okay, I think I can visualize this. It's like packing oranges in a box.
Right.
You can arrange them however you want, but beyond a certain density, they simply cannot fit without touching. And if brand spheres touch, they overlap in the consumer's mind.
Exactly. They lose differentiation.
So if we calculate the entire available volume of this eight-dimensional box, how many oranges can we actually fit before the market is completely full?
Well, assuming a moderate perceptual threshold, the mathematics dictate that the total brand space holds about 100 million distinct positions.
Wait, 100 million?
Yes, 100 million.
That is, that's an incredibly massive number.
It is massive, which explains why deep differentiation is always theoretically possible. But a finite number means it's geometrically constrained. The box has walls.
So when a strategist complains that a market is, you know, too crowded, what does that actually mean mathematically? Is the market actually full with 100 million brands, or are they just looking at a bad 2D projection?
It is almost entirely an imagination problem caused by dimensionality collapse.
Dimensionality collapse.
Right. When a market feels crowded, it is not because the eight-dimensional space is full. It is because all the competitors have clustered into the exact same low-dimensional subspace.
Oh, I see.
They are ignoring five or six axes and competing on just two or three, usually price, product utility, and maybe a thin narrative.
Right, the usual suspects.
Exactly. In that tiny, flattened subcorner of the geometry, the spheres are packed tight. They are severely overlapping. But the math tells us that if a brand were to activate a dormant dimension, say, a radical ideological stance, or a deep temporal heritage, they would instantly lift off that crowded flat plane.
And just move into a massive expanse of unoccupied eight-dimensional white space.
Precisely.
So finding white space isn't just a metaphor you throw on a whiteboard. It's a literal computable coordinate.
It really is.
Okay, but a brand only exists if someone is looking at it. Right. So do the mathematical rules of eight-dimensional space apply to human observers, too? Just as brand positions are constrained, the way we group the people looking at them must be governed by something similar.
They absolutely are. In spectral brand theory, we model an observer's perceptual profile based on how much weight they assign to each of those eight dimensions.
Okay.
And because human attention is a finite resource, those eight-dimension weights must always add up to exactly one.
Like allocating 20% of your attention to price, 40% to narrative, 10% to social status, and so on, until you hit 100%.
Exactly. Mathematically, the geometric shape formed by eight non-negative numbers that add up to one is called a seven simplex.
A seven simplex.
Right. And to build intuition for that, think about lower dimensions. A zero simplex is a single point. A one simplex is a line segment. A two simplex is a triangle. A three simplex is a tetrahedron or a pyramid. So a seven simplex is simply the eight-dimensional version of that progression. Mm. This specific geometric object contains every single possible observer profile. If you perceive a brand, your coordinates exist somewhere inside this seven simplex.
What does the shape of a seven simplex actually tell us about the people inside it, though?
Well, it reveals a phenomenon known as concentration of measure.
Concentration of measure.
In lower dimensions, like a 2D square or a 3D room, volume is fairly well distributed. There's plenty of space in the middle.
Right.
But in high dimensional probability, the volume of a shape doesn't sit evenly in the center. The sheer geometry pushes it outward.
Why does it push outward, though? What is the physical mechanism causing that?
It comes down to the explosion of corners. As you add dimensions, the number of corners and edges multiplies exponentially.
Okay, so more corners.
Right. And by the time you reach eight dimensions, the sheer surface area of the boundaries is so massive that it pulls almost all the volume outward, stretching the space like an expanding balloon. The center becomes relatively empty, and the edges become incredibly dense. The math proves that on a seven simplex, at least 57% of the volume sits in the boundary zones between regions.
Wait, so 57% of your observers are sitting in a space where they are not fully in one group and not fully in another.
Exactly.
They're inherently caught in the transitions. Wait, let me unpack this. If 57% of people are sitting in a boundary zone, wouldn't a traditional market researcher just say, we have bad data?
Oh, all the time.
Right, can't we just get better survey tools, ask tighter questions, and force people into clean, sharp segments?
That is the standard industry reflex. You know, our data is noisy, let's clean it up. Mm. But the fundamental rule of spectral brand theory is that this is not a data problem. It is geometric property of the space itself.
It's just how the math works.
Right. Because high dimensional spaces inherently have massive boundary volumes, hard, sharp assignments are mathematically suspect. Fuzzy boundaries are the mathematically correct answer.
That completely upends how you build a target audience.
It does.
If you are throwing away people who don't fit perfectly into the center of a segment, you are throwing away the majority of your market.
Which is why we use the term observer cohort instead of segment.
Observer cohort.
Yeah. A segment implies a demographic box with hard walls. An observer cohort is defined entirely by perception, not demographics. It is a cluster of people who weight the world similarly. And because of the geometry of the seven simplex, those clusters will always provably overlap and blur at the edges.
Okay. So we know where brands sit in the E8 lattice, and we know observer cohorts in the seven simplex have inherently fuzzy boundaries. But people aren't static.
Right.
They move through time. What happens as these observers actually encounter the brand day after day, year after year?
This is where we shift from static geometry to dynamics. Brand perception is path dependent.
Path dependent.
Meaning the order in which you encounter signals matters just as much as what those signals actually are.
Let me introduce a vital statistical term here for the listeners, ergodic.
Mm.
If a system is ergodic, it means the outcomes are path independent. Order does not matter.
Right.
Like if you flip a coin 100 times, the sequence of heads and tails doesn't change the ultimate outcome that you'll get roughly 50 of each.
Exactly.
But what we are talking about here is non-ergodic. Brand perception is heavily path dependent.
It is. A foundational study by Hogarth and Einhorn in 1992 proved this dynamic in human psychology. They demonstrated that step-by-step belief updating produces completely different outcomes than batch evaluation.
So step-by-step updating is like reading a terrible review online, then trying the product yourself a week later, then seeing a polished television ad a month after that.
Yes.
The sequence filters how you process the next event.
Exactly.
And batch evaluation would be, what, locking yourself in a room and reviewing the ad, the product, and the review all at the exact same time?
Yes. In the real world, observers process brands step by step, and the math behind this non-ergodic updating leads to a phenomenon we call conviction asymmetry.
Conviction asymmetry.
Negative information damages a positive reputation much, much faster than positive information can repair a negative reputation.
Well, it's the old adage, right? Trust takes years to build and seconds to break.
It is, but the mathematics go further than just confirming it is harder to rebuild. It introduces a concept called absorbing states.
Absorbing states, okay.
In our eight-dimensional model, an observer's perception on any given dimension is scored from 0 to 10. The absorption boundary sits at exactly 2.0.
2.0.
If an observer's perception of your brand on a specific dimension drops below that 2.0 threshold, the conviction crystallizes. It becomes an absorbing state.
Is it essentially a perceptual black hole? Wait, no, a black hole just pulls things in. Is it more like blowing a fuse in a house?
Oh, that's a brilliant analogy.
Like once the electrical current drops below a certain point or surges too high, the circuit physically breaks. You can pump all the electricity, all the positive PR you want into the house, but until you somehow flip that fuse back, the lights stay off.
Yes.
Are you saying you cannot recover from a terrible first impression just by burying it in an avalanche of good impressions later? The math says recovery is structurally impossible.
The blown fuse analogy captures the mechanism perfectly. This is a formalized phenomenon in consumer psychology, mathematically modeled using ergodicity economics. We describe the initial fluid state of belief as a perception cloud.
A perception cloud.
Yeah, a probabilistic cluster of signals forming the brand in the consumer's mind. But once that cloud collapses into a hardened brand conviction below that 2.0 boundary, the observer's perceptual vocabulary for your brand simply deletes that dimension.
Wow.
The signal isn't just weak to them anymore. The fuse is blown. The signal is invisible. You can spend $50 million running ads about your new ethical supply chain, but if your ideological dimension has fallen into the absorbing state, the observer literally cannot process the positive signal.
That should be terrifying for any brand manager listening. You cannot just spend your way out of a crystallized negative prior.
You cannot. It reveals that crisis management is fundamentally a geometric problem, not just a public relations problem. You have to intercept the downward trajectory before it crosses the 2.0 absorption boundary.
Because once it crosses, the dimension is locked.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom out from the 7th simplex and the E8 lattice and the blown fuses of absorbing states, what is the ultimate takeaway for the people actually building these brands? The math does not replace intuition. It tells you exactly where intuition will fail.
Intuition tells you that an average score represents the whole.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've seen, two brands scoring 78 out of 100 can be structurally opposite. Mathematics proves it, not opinion.
Right. Intuition tells you that you can perfectly segment your audience if you just buy enough data, but 57% of your observers are in boundary zones. That is not noise, that is geometry.
And intuition tells you that a massive ad campaign can fix a bad reputation. The math proves that non-ergodic dynamics and absorbing states make certain types of perceptual damage mathematically irreversible.
Every dashboard that collapses eight dimensions into a single score is provably lying to you by destroying structural information. If you want to go deeper on the proofs, the Lecture 2 series covers the full mathematical foundations. If you want to see how these results apply to the Aker framework specifically, Episode 16 is the bridge between the classical model and the spectral formalization.
And for full transparency, the rigorous mathematical foundation we have discussed today relies on 20 research papers currently hosted on Zenodo.
Right, the Zenodo preprints.
Yeah. These are preprints actively under journal review, meaning they represent the absolute cutting edge of the field, establishing these geometric proofs for the very first time.
Which means you are hearing the future of brand strategy before it has even hit the textbooks. Now, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to chew on. Throughout this entire deep dive, we've talked about the math of what a brand emits, right? The signals it pushes out into the eight-dimensional space. But in spectral brand theory, there is another concept called structural absence.
Right, the deliberate, calculated withholding of signals.
Think of a scarcity brand. Like an ultra-luxury watchmaker refusing to discount, refusing to advertise broadly, refusing to put their product in every store. They are intentionally emitting nothing on specific economic and narrative dimensions. If a brand intentionally emits nothing, does that nothing have a gravitational mass we can calculate in an eight-dimensional space? How much does nothing weigh?
It acts as the dark matter of brand perception. It is entirely invisible, yet gravitationally massive.
So the next time someone hands you a single brand health score and says, look, we're at a 78, ask yourself, what is the math hiding? What is the humidity in their 75-degree desert? Because the numbers might look clean, but the reality is beautifully mathematically complex.